Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding. And check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Hey, yo, what's up, everybody? This is Joe Pizzapia, and this is the RotoWire DFS podcast sponsored by FanDuel. I am your host. It's Friday. It's football. It's Joe Pizzapia and John McKechnie. Johnny boy, how you doing?
Oh, you know how I'm doing, man. Well, actually, I'm still emotionally recovering from our final baseball podcast of the season. But, you know, there is still football, and thus there's still hope. So I'm feeling good.
Yes, it was a turning of the page, so to speak. Hashtag Matt Harvey face. So you go check that out if you want a good laugh. That's a good time if you're just in the mood for podcast today over here at RotoWire. But yes, we've turned the page officially on baseball for you and I. Now it's all just football all the time from now to the end of the year. And I know people are already annoyed that I said baseball on this podcast already. So without further ado, let's get into it. Quarterbacks this week, let's start there. Top of the board is Tom Brady, and let's stop there for a second and just bask in the glow of the greatest of all time, because he is. I mean, he just is. Now, it's a tougher defense this week. Houston's a tough defense, too. I'm not going to take away anything, but he's got a tough defense against specifically the pass. So that's something to keep in mind here. However, I feel very good about Brady in this one, because more so the Carolina offense is really unable to move the football a lot. They have a lot of issues, a lot of, you know, health problems and whatnot. And I'm looking at Brady at 95 in cash games, and I'm still okay paying for it. And as we get on with the podcast, we're going to show you some of the players that you can put in your lineup that allow you to afford Tom Brady.
Yeah, I think that, you know, in terms of high-end quarterbacks or cash game quarterbacks, the conversation really starts with Brady. And that's also kind of where the way this week kind of shook out slate-wise, because you gotta play the London slate if you want to get a Drew Brees going against Miami, or, you know, you would have had to go do the all-week slate with the Thursday included if you wanted to get Rodgers. So that by process of elimination, like, Brady is far and away the best quarterback on the board, and it's reflected in the price. I mean, it's pretty obvious, you know, $1,500 more expensive than Matt Ryan, and, you know, really rightfully so. And I think that this, like you said, this is a situation where Carolina is going to be getting in a lot of three and outs. That defense is going to get worn down, and, you know, Brady just has so many weapons, you know, be it, a guy out of the backfield and James White, a guy over the slot, you know, deep down the field with Cooks or just Gronk. So, I mean, there's so many ways that he can beat you that I don't think Carolina's defense is going to be ready to hold up for 60 minutes.
No, and Matt Ryan, some people will argue to fade him at 8K from Brady, but I don't see it, because this is a guy who's only going 2x value, whereas Brady's having those 2 to 3, and that's worth paying the premium for, especially in the cash games where you get that little extra bounce from quarterback. It offsets, God forbid, you have a bad outing from a tight end or a defense or something like that. You know, those extra 10 points sometimes can really be a difference maker. Let's talk about Russell Wilson at 79. He's at home against Indianapolis. He's coming off his first good game of the year. We know Indy on defense is just terrible, especially against the pass. But I don't know. I'm still not feeling this. I don't feel confident in Russell Wilson. Maybe it's the offensive line. I just can't get there for him.
Yeah, I think this is a situation where Wilson is probably going to be most people's pivot from Tom Brady among these more upper-end quarterbacks, and, you know, rightfully so with Indianapolis. But, you know, Doug Baldwin got a little bit banged up last week. There's just a lot of question marks on that offense, so a lot more so than you know, people were expecting, and people were approaching the Seattle offense in, you know, season-long drafts. And right now, you got to realize that this isn't an offense that you feel particularly great about. And I know they put up some points on the road last week, but still, there are issues there. And I'm probably off of Russell. Like, if I'm not going Tom Brady, I'm going much further down the board.
It's a tough quarterback week, which is why I'm really, you know, on the soapbox for Brady, because Derek Carr is in Denver, which is not a good matchup. Ben Roethlisberger is completely dead to me on the road for the rest of his life and my life and anyone else's life for listening to this podcast. You got Stafford going to Minnesota, which is not easy. You got Mariota going to Houston, also not easy. And then Blake Bortles, who, if he's not playing in England, I know it's the Jets, but I can't feel good about him either. if you go all the way down to the board, you know, let's start with Trevor Siemian. Now, I understand last week wasn't the greatest outing. I get that. But at home so far this year, he's played pretty well, relatively well. I mean, 23 back-to-back and home games this year. But, you know, Oakland, I know Oakland's looking to kind of bounce back after that loss last week that was a trap game that we all saw coming. But at the same time, you know, I still feel good enough about Trevor Siemian considering that Oakland defense just, to me, still hasn't shown me anything.
Yeah, especially in the secondary. And, you know, so really if Denver's offensive line is able to give Siemian some time to throw and you know, kind of alleviate or negate that Oakland pass rush, then I think that the receiving core that Denver has is going to be able to get open like we saw last week with what Washington was able to do against that secondary. So I do like Siemian a fair bit, and I'm certainly considering him because he's at home. But I actually like, and maybe I'm like too much into the recency bias here, but you know, if you move down the board a little bit, it's interesting to me that Deshaun Watson and Jameis Winston are both 7,300, but I think I actually like Deshaun Watson a little bit more this week. And you know, for a GPP consideration, I think he opens things up for you for to load up the rest of your lineup a fair bit. And he played really well. He gives you like a bit of that rushing floor to help matters. And he's getting Will Fuller back, who's kind of a game breaking receiver. So I like Watson a fair bit, especially considering how poor Tennessee looked defensively last week.
Yeah. And if in terms of cash game quarterbacks, we said it's a limited group. I mean, it's Brady for me and everybody else is no go. But in the flip side, in tournaments, there's a lot of potential here. Prescott's potential, Simeon's potential, Carson Palmer's in play. As you said, Deshaun Watson, I agree 100% with you. You know, the Carson Palmer one's an interesting one, too. He's at home against San Fran. I don't love Palmer, but I think he can certainly do enough in that game. We saw Jared Goff go off against them. I'll tell you what, right, too, Phillip Rivers and the Chargers right now, that's a season on the brink for them. Phillip Rivers has to get right. Are they going to be 0-4? And that's the end of their season as far as I'm concerned. So that's another guy if you've got the guts to do it. Jared Goff, there's two guys here at 72 and 71. Actually, three. I'm going to throw Eli in this mix too. There's Goff at Dallas. There's Andy Dalton at Cleveland and Eli Manning at Tampa. Now, all three are on the road. Eli's got a spot where Tampa's really banged up defensively, and all of a sudden they're looking healthy, and we know they have no running game, so it's going to be probably a 300-yard game from Eli because it has to be. Then you got Andy Dalton, who's starting to look better. Green is getting better. Mixon's getting more touches. That's positive since the coordinator change. And then Goff against a Dallas defense that's given up a ton of yards as well through the air. If you had to pick one of these three, roughly the same price, which one would you go for, Goff, Manning, or Dalton?
Or I think, you know, I'm going to kind of hold my nose and go the Eli route because, like you said, the Tampa Bay defense has been very vulnerable through the air. According to DVOA, they're like 29th in the league as far as defending the pass goes. So that's pretty serious. And, you know, they got shredded by Case Keenum. That cannot be forgotten. So I think that Eli, despite the fact that he's on the road, you know, Odell, you know, he's healthy now, it looks like, you know, so that adds just like a whole another element to that offense. And like you said, there's just no rushing presence from the Giants. So Eli's going to be throwing it, you know, upwards of 40 times. And I think that sort of volume is going to carry him and kind of make him the best of that trio. But I think arguments can certainly be made for Goff because that secondary for Dallas made Carson Palmer look good. And then, you know, Cleveland, still Cleveland. So, I mean, they've compiled some talent, but it's still not completely gelled yet. I'm probably ranking Dalton third of this group, but Manning and Goff, I think both are viable.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I think Manning's going to be very chalky in tournaments this week, but I don't think it's wrong. You know, yeah. I think it might be one of those spots where, you know, either a Brady lineup or a Manning lineup is going to be towards the top of a lot of tournaments. And I say that because, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, you know, you can't take some of those cash game lineups and throw them in tournaments. Sometimes you can, especially when they got a guy like Brady who's capable of having a 30-point day. You know, that could be a difference maker, you know. So
totally.
Take a look at last week if you don't believe me and look at some of the top of the boards there. All right, let's go over to running board and look at the elite group this week. Now, Le'Veon Bell still looking to get going. He's going against Baltimore 86. It's a tough sell for me, kind of on the fence, despite how much I hate Roethlisberger. I feel like that kind of eats into Le'Veon Bell a tad as well, his performance. Then you got Devonta Freeman at 85. I feel pretty good about him. I feel very good about Elliott. I know the Rams defense is good, but still Elliott at home is always a good one. LeSean McCoy. Now here's a tricky one, because McCoy's had a couple bad outings here, but at the same time, you know, if he should get involved in the passing game substantially, we know how Atlanta can struggle against the pass. Is Shady McCoy here today kind of an underrated low ownership guy that might be flying under the radar, and this might be a better matchup than people realize?
I mean, all those reasons make sense here, but it's just hard for me to pay that price when there's $200 more for you know, the safety of going Ezekiel Elliott. Like McCoy, like you said, has thrown in some clunkers thus far. That Buffalo offense does not look particularly good. Atlanta, I expect them to jump out to a lead here against the Bills. I know that McCoy has some appeal in the passing game, and that's where he can kind of sting that Atlanta defense. That's how kind of Ty Montgomery did it. But I'm not sure that McCoy quite is the same level as a pass catcher as Montgomery. So I'm probably off of him this week. I understand your rationale there, but I'm probably not using him.
I'm going to be on him in tournaments, because I think that's a difference maker because of the ownership level. I think at the very least, there's a separation there where, you know, if he does have a good game, that's a guy that could jump out at you. Now, I'm looking for some revenge against the Jets, because I didn't get what I wanted last week from Ajayi, but I think I'm going to get it from Leonard Fournette, because the Jets are awful against the run. This is still a run-first offense. I don't care what the score last week told you with the Jaguars, but Leonard Fournette's a guy that's given you 2x value every week so far, and he's got a great matchup this week. To me, sign me up for Fournette. Underneath him, you got Dalvin Cook, who I think is going to be in there. I wouldn't mess around with Gordon. CJ Anderson's not my type of DFS back, so I'm going to shy away because I think he lacks that big-time upside. But if you continue to go down, you got the usual suspects here. You feel good maybe about taking a risk on a Powell or a Gillisley. I think it's going to be more Gillisley in this week, too, than you saw last week. A little bit more grinding because of the kind of defense that Carolina is. But we really, you know, we talked about it, you and I, off air yesterday. Joe Mixon at 56, it's going to be high-owned. I love it. I don't care if it's going to be high-owned. You saw the 18 carries and the 3 catches last week in Green Bay. I think he's prime for a big game here against the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, right now, in terms of return on the value, there's a guy right now that's going to allow you to go to Brady.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like the almost like the market inefficiency or something for this particular week slate. And I think you're kind of mistaken if you go away from Mixon, and you got to consider like the trend in Cincinnati now that the old offensive coordinator Zampese is gone. Lazor trying to get the ball into the playmakers' hands a bit more. You saw them target the hell out of AJ Green last week, and they started to give Mixon the ball more, gave him a ton more snaps than anyone else in that backfield. I expect that number to increase even further, like the disparity between his snap counts and the rest of that Cincinnati backfield. So, you know, it's sort of like fade him at your own risk at this point.
No, I agree. I mean, because he doesn't have to do much to return value, number one. So just like Gurley in week one, where everybody said, wow, it's really cheap and he's going to be highly owned. He was 30% owned. And guess what? He was 30% owned and in the winning tournament lineups all over the joint. So if you want to get a little pivot from Mixon, though, if you want to differentiate a little bit, Javoris Allen, I think, will be a bounce back too against Pittsburgh. I expect Baltimore to really bounce back in this game because they got absolutely shellacked and embarrassed. And a Harbaugh team is a team that's going to come back and realize what happened there, and they're going to be ready, especially in this in-division game. So I expect a lot of Javoris Allen in this one. As you can continue to go down here, let's talk about Wendell Smallwood. Now, I prefer him on a full PPR because I'm concerned about the touchdown upside, but what are your thoughts on him at 53? Is he another viable pivot from Joe Mixon in that price range?
Yeah, I think the way that you said it works. Like, he's a pivot from Mixon. Like, if you're not going too expensive running backs, then I think either Smallwood, Tevin Coleman, or Joe Mixon would be your guys. Smallwood, there's a bit of the unknown here with him. You know, this is really going to be the first time that we see him get a ton of work out of that backfield now that Sproles is gone. But that Chargers defense isn't all that great. It's missing some key pieces. So, you know, if Smallwood is able to kind of get a bunch of targets and, you know, give you a little bit rushing wise, I think that, you know, like you said, he doesn't need to do a ton to hit value. I think that Mixon's ceiling is demonstrably higher than what Smallwood has.
Nice vocab. Demonstrably. I like it. You're welcome. Very good.
Friday morning.
all that college education, all those student loans paying off. Carlos Hyde and DeMarco Murray. Hyde's at 68. DeMarco Murray's at 65. I want to go to these mid-range guys because Hyde is an integral part of that offense. And this is a spot where I know he didn't practice on Wednesday, but I think things are looking good. He's still questionable as of right now. But if he's in there, you know the volume is going to be there for Hyde. And then you got DeMarco Murray, who's coming off his first good game all year, you know, over this first couple weeks. And he's 65. He's on the road. Both of these guys, I feel like people still aren't buying in on. And they are kind of in the mid-range, so they're not quite the Fournette and they're not quite the Mixon. What are your thoughts on these guys? Do you think either one of them are viable? And if so, what kind of contest would you play them in, or which one would you play them at all if you indeed thought you could make a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a bonus with them? Because I feel like general public is still not buying into Hyde or Murray after this last week.
Yeah, you know, you consider what Hyde has to compete with out of that backfield versus what what Murray does. But last week kind of told everybody, you know, Derrick Henry was sort of the hot commodity last week because he played well when DeMarco was banged up the previous week. But a healthy DeMarco played a fair bit more snaps than did Derrick Henry. He played 18 more snaps, so that's a pretty big percentage there. So I think that Murray's going to see plenty of work this week. I'm not as worried about the Henry vulture as you know, some people could be, but I still think Hyde sees more. So I'd probably go the Hyde route. And I thought that Hyde ran extremely well in San Francisco's last game. And he's had a bit longer of a layoff to kind of get himself right. I know that you mentioned some limited in practice throughout this week, but I would probably go with Carlos Hyde against that Arizona front.
Yeah, I think it's a good call too. I agree. I'm still not buying quite Murray. I want him to be very healthy. Right now I know he's healthy enough and he played well last week, but I don't know if you expect that same outing on the road. The other guy too is McCaffrey in that mid-range, where if you think Kareem Hunt gave, you know, the Patriots problems in week one, that defense without Hightower, I think that McCaffrey's the exact same kind of guy who's going to give them fits. I don't like anything else in the Carolina offense this week. We were all cautiously optimistic and holding and crossing our fingers that Cam Newton would muster enough and figure it out and things would get back on track. But after that, they're done for me. But McCaffrey in this game, I think you can make the case for. All right, let's go to wide receiver, top of the board, Antonio Brown. Look, he's always steady, but I think you have other options in the elite group. You got Odell Beckham, who has a great matchup against Tampa at 91. Him and Eli together is going to be a very popular pairing. Him and Shepard, Manning and Shepard, will also be very popular, would be my guess too, on the fade Odell group. Then you got Julio Jones, who's dealing with the back issue. Now, he's been, you know, basically limited or not practicing for the most of the week. And I get it. Whenever you're dealing with a back issue, I think that's a little bit, you know, just in terms of maintenance. He's been very good. Hasn't found the end zone yet. I expect that to change. I'm happy paying $700 less than Odell Beckham for Julio. And I still feel good about Julio despite the back issue. The problem is AJ Green is even $400 less than him. And I feel even better about Green against Cleveland.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, like, I think that Julio is due for a big game. So I'm off of these top two guys myself as well. But I think a lot of people will see Julio kind of sandwiched in between those two groups, where AJ Green's 400 less, and then you could go up the board. And I think that's going to and drive his ownership down. So I imagine that Green's going to have a fair bit more ownership. And I think people, you know, will kind of see the baseline, like there hasn't been a monster Julio game yet, and just sort of move away from it, especially going against Buffalo defense. It's been relatively tough so far. But so I think that ups Julio's tournament appeal this week. I think that he's going to be lesser owned of the top four, even top five guys. I think Mike Evans is also going to be a bit trendy this week, even if like Janoris Jenkins is back for the Giants. I still think that Jones, probably the lowest owned, but I think it ups his tournament appeal.
Now, Doug Baldwin is dealing with a groin issue. You got to keep an eye on him. Now, if he is playing, that defense for Indianapolis, the secondary is so bad that I think Doug Baldwin at 76 becomes a really, really good fade from the very top of the group. Now, a lot of it has to do with his health. Crabtree's another guy that, you know, I love him every time. It's about health. It's also a little bit of a question about Denver because Derek Carr's been terrible against Denver in his career so far. And you gotta keep that in mind. Some guys just don't play well against certain teams in certain locations. They just have their number. Keenan Allen's been a target monster. We know that. But unfortunately, hasn't yet turned around to the big day. Sammy Watkins coming off a big one. Stephon Diggs also. So we got this second grouping here after Baldwin where you got Allen, Watkins, Diggs, and even Golden Tate we could throw in here. Now, I've got a lineup of Golden Tate in it. I still think Diggs is very viable. Watkins, I feel less confident in. And then Keenan Allen, I know the volume is going to be there, but so far the conversions haven't. And I think there's equal chance it's a coin flip that the Chargers save their season or the Chargers just go away for the rest of the year in this game.
Yeah, no, that like you said, that that Chargers game, their season is sort of on the line to start here. But I'm not on Keenan Allen this week personally. It's really, to me, a question of how are you approaching Diggs versus one of like the Denver receivers, because with Diggs, he's been such a target monster. Like you said, they're giving him the ball and he's been efficient with it. He's catching most everything that's thrown his way and he's making big plays with it. But I think Detroit's secondary, oddly enough, is a huge step up from what he was going against last week against Tampa Bay. So I think you have to at least consider that. And then, you know, moving down a little bit, Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, both guys that see a ton of targets in that Denver offense. And, you know, it's roughly like a 9 targets for Sanders and 8 targets a game for Thomas. But Thomas, about 4 yards more efficient per target than Sanders. So I think that the Thomas would be the guy that I'm looking for in this one. And, you know, especially considering Denver at home against a bad Oakland secondary. If you wanted to go that Simeon route, Thomas would be the one I'm pairing him with.
Yeah, I can understand that. You know, both of them, I think, are very viable. You know, Sanders coming off the big game last time, and I think Sanders is, the last time at home. Sanders is a guy for me that last year, and you go back and you look at all the red zone targets he had, he just didn't convert a lot of them. So that sometimes can be a fluky thing. Yeah. If he continues to start converting them at a better rate, I could see a situation where 3 weeks from now, we're flipping those and we're thinking Sanders is better than Thomas just because of that conversion potentially that might be available. Now, we'll see how the defenses handle these two going forward. Chris Hogan at 69 is another guy in that range too if you want to pair up with Brady. That's more of a tournament play than a cash game play, as even though Hogan's been good. Same thing with Amendola. I don't think he has enough upside. I don't really want Amendola, Cooks, no. Any of those guys. I prefer Gronk. Give me Gronk and Brady together, but we'll touch on that when we get to tight ends. Now, let's go down to the lesser guys. Pierre Garçon's been a guy that's getting a ton of balls thrown his way. We all know that the scoring opportunities are what's the problem. That's what's limited. He's got a tough matchup this week in Arizona, so I'm going to stay away from him. But on the flip side, I do like Fitzgerald. I like him to continue doing what he's doing. As long as the calendar still says, early October, late September, I'm still okay. By the time we get to Halloween, I won't be okay with Larry Fitzgerald, but right now we're still in that window where it's okay.
Right. I mean, they're force feeding the hell out of Larry. Like he's pretty much, you know, by virtue of JJ Nelson and John Brown just being question marks seemingly every week, Fitzgerald really becomes the only guy that Palmer has to throw to. And again, this is a San Francisco secondary that got absolutely shredded by Jared Goff. And for as improved as Jared Goff looks, I think that's still, you know, something to consider. And this is also a home game for the Cardinals. So I do like Fitzgerald a fair bit. And then moving down the board, like way bit, this is definitely more of a tournament play. But Adam Humphries last week, I was looking at the targets. He had 10 of them. And, his yards per target isn't necessarily great. But so maybe you prefer this in more of a PPR type of a full point PPR type of format. But, you know, Mike Evans is going to be drawing a ton of attention, Cameron Brait and O.J. Howard. So I think Humphries can kind of supplement the over the middle type of offense for Tampa Bay. And I think that he might actually sneakily be not a bad play there.
You know, and that's the whole point. In the half PPR, I always give the tie to the guy who can score a touchdown.
Yep.
You know, that's what I'm looking for. I'm always looking. And people say, wow, it's only half. It's not a big difference, but it is. So I think you always have to look for the guys. If you look at your lineup, especially in cash games, you can go, okay, I could see all these guys getting a touchdown, then you're in good shape. I think that's what you got to look for first and foremost. Volume number one, number two, you know, touchdown upside. And then the third thing is that, you know, ability to make sure they're getting catches and all that stuff. I want touchdowns because touchdowns are what's a separator, especially sometimes those more touchdown dependent guys tend to be less liked and less owned. So that's something to keep in mind. I don't know about you, John, but I was shocked that Kelvin Benjamin was back in practicing and it looks like he's going to play. I still don't want him. I'm just kind of saying it out loud because I just can't believe it's true.
That I mean, that is something right there. I mean, yeah, did not expect that.
All right, let's talk about Sterling Shepard at 61, a guy who I mentioned earlier. I think is going to be heavily owned off that last week. Now, he had 10 targets for 7 catches, 133 and a score. That's great. I don't expect a repeat of that, but if he gives me somewhere around 5 and 70 and maybe a touchdown, I still think he's pretty viable at 6,100.
I like that, and I think you also bring up a good point that it's like, when have we seen that from Sterling Shepard yet in the pros? I mean, that's something that he would do at Oklahoma and stuff, but had not seen him do it quite to that level in the pros yet. I think that he comes back down to earth a little bit. And then when Rishard Matthews is sitting there for $100 less, I know that Houston has a pretty solid defense overall. I think, you know, the Brady game notwithstanding. Matthews with the fact that Corey Davis is out, that's one less kind of factor to be worried about. I think Matthews is going to see a ton of targets, and he's on like a great streak. I saw it maybe from your guy Jake Seeley that he's had like either 70 yards or a touchdown in like 10 straight games or something along those lines. So he's been remarkably consistent, and I do like the fact that there's one less guy to worry about in that Tennessee receiving core. So I like Matthews if I'm going in this little tier.
All right, let's keep going down because there's another guy at 5K who bears mention. Cooper Kupp's a guy of 56. Yeah, I think against Dallas it's viable, but I think it still lacks a little bit of upside. You got the Robbie Anderson curse group, but I want to keep going. I'm going to keep going down and down and down. And there's a couple guys here 55 and under that I think you have to be aware of. The first one's Robert Woods. I think Woods has a little bit more touchdown upside potential in this game, particular against the Cowboys, than even Cooper Kupp has, and he's a lot cheaper than Watkins. And then if you go even further, I gotta say, this week, if you talked about a couple of the other guys here who are lower owned or lower price, but Travis Benjamin,
yes,
against the Eagles,
educate the people. You've been 5K. On this all week.
I have. I've been on it all week, and I was on it last week too, where he was, you know, getting a fair amount of targets. And yes, I understand that he had that one game in the middle against Miami that was dreadful. I get that. But at Denver, he was good. He got in the end zone. Last week, it was a big volume. I think that what you're seeing is Benjamin's kind of that big, you know, taking a shot down the field guy. So he has explosiveness. And I think when you're down at 5K, all you need is explosiveness. That's what you're looking for. And I kind of liken it back to last year at this time where Tyreek Hill was. Because Tyreek Hill was around the same price. He was 5,100, 5,200. I kept saying to people, look, you go out and you play him because he's explosive, because he has the chance to give you a big game. He may or may not, but if he doesn't, 5K is not going to kill you. So even if he comes back with a 6, okay, you'll make it up somewhere else because you've hopefully, you know, found other things. And this is another guy, when you talk about trying to make room for Tom Brady, Travis Benjamin allows you to make room for Tom Brady.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things. And then you mentioned, I think you nailed it as far as Benjamin's skill set. I mean, that guy is remarkably fast. And I did some digging into like where Philly is allowing their yards. A lot of the time that they're pretty tough against like those top two receivers. And that third guy can be the one that burns them. So like a Tyrell Williams.
Well, look at Shepard last week.
Exactly. Like Tyrell Williams, like you'd be off of him, but then Travis Benjamin at 5K. And you know, to your point, it's not that actually, I don't think that there's even like the chance of him going for that 6 points, because last week, 8 targets. So Rivers is obviously getting more and more comfortable with him. And he was doing like 10 yards a target. So, I mean, very, very efficient with his looks. So assuming that he gets, you know, anywhere from like the 6, 7, 8, even 9 target range, I think he's going to do a lot with it.
All right, let's go over to tight ends. Gronk is 8,500. And guess what, kids? It's a Gronk smash week. Last week was a Gronk smash week. It's starting to shape up like every week might be that. Well, like most weeks at home, you know, those games where they're at home, I'm all about going Gronk. And, you know, last week, New Orleans, or 2 weeks ago, I should say, you know, that was a no-brainer too because of the matchup. But if you want to talk about consistency of being part of the offense, it's going to be Gronk when it comes to Brady. And I know you got to pay a premium for both of them, but you're paying for premium talent. So I'm all for it, especially in a week where there's so many questions. Tight end just seems to get worse and worse. Delanie Walker's a safe one at 65. I think you're fine with him. I think you're fine with Ertz. Outside of that, I don't think you're fine. I don't think you're fine. And I was the Witten whisperer a couple of weeks ago. I gave you Witten. Clay maybe a 53 if you're going to fade the whole group and say, you know what, screw it, I'm going to go way down here, because Clay has been very consistent. He's got 2 touchdowns in the first 3 games. He's getting somewhere around 5 targets, you know, 6 targets per game. So we're on average. That's a good thing. And Tyrod Taylor and the Bills are starting to play a little bit better offensively of late. Then you got Cameron Brate, who, you know, I want to talk about him for a second, because the Giants suck against tight ends. They've sucked against tight ends for 3 years now. They have yet to, it's like, it's amazing. I don't know what they do in the front office. Like, hey, Eric Flowers stinks. Well, let's never address it. Hey,
let's just keep him at left tackle.
Yeah. Let's just say nice things and, you know, and hope for things. And you know, eventually people just ignore it. Right. And they can't stop the tight end. And that's been 3 years, but they've done nothing in the linebacker core to address it. I think Cameron Brate has limited upside. He's got touchdown potential in this one. And if you want to just throw a dart between him and Clay, I'm okay with that this week if you don't want to go Gronk.
Yeah, I mean, really for me, I guess I'm a little bit bigger on Ertz this week than you are. I mean, Gronk, obviously, rightfully so, the number one guy, but Ertz really is playing like a top three tight end. And like you said, the tight end crop this year has been really disappointing overall. I mean, like, if you're a guy that's been heavily invested in Jimmy Graham or Tyler Eifert, that really has been hurting you a fair bit. So I like Ertz a lot at 6,900. If you wanted to, for me, my dart would probably be Tyler Kroft on Cincinnati, mostly just because he's going against Cleveland, and I think that Cleveland secondary can get torched a little bit by the tight end position. I think, you know, Jack Doyle played pretty well, and I think Kroft at 4,900. I mean, it's definitely not something that you're counting on a lot of return on, but I think you could do worse if you're kind of punting a tight end.
Well, and you're doing multiple lineups. I would do one with him and one with Njoku at 49 too, yeah. Because Njoku's another guy that I don't think people realize it. He's got back-to-back games with a touchdown. All you need is the touchdown. That's it.
The guy's a beast too.
He is a beast. He's a terrific player in terms of athleticism. A lot of people, I'm sure, will be on Evan Ingram, but I'd rather have Njoku, to tell you the truth. I think there's a better upside for the touchdown. I'd rather save a couple $100. It's not a lot of savings, but it's enough savings. The rest of this group, you know, the Jenkinses and the, you know, Vance McDonalds and Gates and all. No, hard no. Stop. Put it down right now and go sit in that chair.
Go sit in the corner.
In the corner. Wear this hat and don't look at us until we tell you. But look, outside of that, it's pay for tight end this week. I'm fine with Ertz. My thing with Ertz is always the same problem, which, you know, I think he is good, not great. You know,
okay.
And I think that the problem is that lack of steady red zone opportunity. I think that's the thing that always irks me a little bit, where, you know, it last year towards the second half of the year, it got better. It improved, but the conversion still wasn't there. Now, like I mentioned with Sanders, that can be fluky sometimes. You know, guys can catch balls and then, you know, it's called back or this, you know, things like that happen. But with Ertz, I'm always kind of on the fence with him. In a full PPR, I feel great. In the half, that's where it's always my concern, is what if he doesn't have, you know, he doesn't have a touchdown and he has a bad day, then it's really bad. See, some of these guys like Delanie Walker, he could have a bad day but still get in the end zone. Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing, that's the differential for me. Although Delanie Walker's another guy who doesn't have a touchdown yet on the year, so just makes you want to grow.
Ertz got 2 red zone targets last week. Obviously, there's not like a ton or anything. But,
no, but that's, you know, not bad. That's a good
team high. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, well, I so mean, really, it's
I'll
a matter
it to
of
you. Clay or
does
Ertz,
Philly do it? Yeah, Ertz.
Clay or Ertz. You'll still go Ertz. Okay.
Absolutely.
You'll pay the premium for him. Ertz, yes. Or Gronk for you?
Boy, I mean, that's the issue. Like, you really do have to get a Travis Benjamin in your lineup if you want to get the Gronkowski too. So if you want a bit more of like a balanced lineup, then I'd say Ertz, but high upside, obviously it's Gronk.
All right, let's go over to defenses here. Obviously, Seattle's going to be a premium, and I can understand why, but there's also other places to go. Jacksonville for 200 less against the Jets is terrific. Jacksonville's played really well defensively this year, not just from the cornerbacks, but also from the pass rush.
Yep.
I expect a lot of turnovers in this game for the Jacksonville side. Atlanta hosting Buffalo is okay. I don't love it. I prefer Denver at Oakland, to tell you the truth, for the same price. As you continue to go down here, is there a mid-range defense that you can make a case for? Is it Arizona against San Fran? Is it a team like Baltimore against the Pittsburgh Steelers and Roethlisberger on the road in that rebound after an embarrassing loss? Again, I can't stress embarrassing enough about the Ravens last week. But
hey, man, you're hurting my feelings now.
Why? You're not a Ravens. Oh, you are? You're a Ravens yeah. guy? That's right. I forgot because you're an Orioles guy.
Yeah.
Okay, let me just – let me soften the blow.
No, but
I'm – incredibly embarrassing. Hey, man, I mean, let's call it what it is.
I woke up, I saw it, and then I went back to sleep. That's pretty much
it. You know,
at
least you woke up because Joe Flacco never did.
No,
Joe Flacco was asleep the entire time, and it's 28
yards. He's going to be jet lagged again, so that's why I actually think the Steelers are my pick for the mid-range defenses, because usually teams will get a bye week after that London game to kind of recuperate. Baltimore opted not to because it was so early in the season. So what that does to them, as far as week four goes, we don't really know. We didn't really know what the travel to London was going to do to them last week. And then we did, and it was horrible. And Pittsburgh also, I just noticed like the differential between where they are on the FanDuel board versus where their defensive DVOA is. They're fourth in the NFL, like across the board in that metric. So I think having them at just 4,500, I think it makes a lot of sense. I think Baltimore could win this game, but it would be like a 17-13 type of thing. So I don't think there's any chance that the Steelers defense gets torched.
All right. I don't have a problem with Houston either. I think Houston's another defense.
I like that.
I love Tennessee and all, but it's, you know, this is a tricky place. I think a tricky spot for them. Sure. The rest of it, I don't see like a cheap defense this week unless you really want to, you know, really go all the way down, just punt defense and go with Cleveland, because let's face it, Cincinnati's offensive line stinks.
Yep.
And it's not going to get much better. So maybe they get a couple sacks on Dalton. You know, maybe there's a few opportunities there, but I really don't see that glaringly obvious. Yep, here's that $4,200 defense I like this week. So it might be another week where it's worth paying up for defense, which is the alternate here. So what you do is, just from a lineup construction standpoint, I'm going to put this out there. Because here's a lineup right now that I have, and I'm not going to give you all of it, but I'm just gonna, you can use your imagination here. If you have Brady, the Dalvin Cook, Fournette / Joe Mixon range, that's where you want to live at running back, okay? Some combination there of those two, or Smallwood on the lesser end. So you got the mid-range guy and the lesser guy, all of which can play like true number ones. I think that's what you go for. Then if you go to the wide receivers, you try to get at least one of those big-time guys. Get a mid-range guy, so the A.J. Green group, maybe a Baldwin. You can even save some money there if he's healthy. And then you go with a Golden Tate, someone like that, in that 7K range. And then you can go and get a guy like Benjamin. It's going to make Brady and Gronk very usable. Now, here's the thing. If you fade down Ertz, like John's saying, from Gronk all the way down to Ertz, well, guess what? You could take that extra couple grand, spend it up so you don't have to use a Benjamin. You can go two guys back-to-back in that 7K. So that's
right.
My advice to you out there right now in terms of, you know, your ability to fluctuate or structure lineups this week. And again, if you can even fade quarterback and then pay up for defense if you want to do that. Although I got to tell you, be very careful with quarterback. I think there's a ton of traps this week, John.
Yeah, that's the main thing here. If you get quarterback wrong this week, I think you're going to be in trouble, because you know if you go away from the Brady and you try to get cute and you're sitting there with 10 points from your quarterback, while like everyone else you're seeing like towards the top of the payout has Brady, you know, with 30, you're sunk pretty much already. So yeah, like you said, this quarterback week is tricky. That, you know, because like we said at the beginning of the show, Breeze not being on the main slate, Rodgers having already played, Cam Newton not being Cam Newton right now. There's no Andrew Luck at this point. So really the tight end or the quarterback crop is really thinned out a fair bit. So be careful.
All right. Over 2.5 million players have won cash prizes playing on FanDuel. To take advantage of our special offer for new users, sign up today at FanDuel.com/RotoWire and you'll get a free 6-month RotoWire subscription plus free entry into the NFL Sunday Million, what? Which offers more than $1 million in cash prizes with your first deposit on FanDuel. Just visit FanDuel.com/RotoWire. Void where prohibited. All right, before we get out of here, bonus question, because we're good like that. Le'Veon Bell has yet to top 20 points in a game so far. Came close last week. He had 18.8, so inching closer to Le'Veon Bell land. Roethlisberger on the road, division opponent against your Baltimore Ravens, who were embarrassed last week. Le'Veon Bell, does he finally cross the 20-point threshold this week?
No. No, he does not.
Look at you.
Yeah.
You bleed I purple.
Against the Steelers, man. They ruined my Christmas last year. Come on.
Oh, well, you know, I'm a Patriots fan, so I've been happy for about 15 years, so I can't really pitch. But I'm also a Mets fan. I'm a loser Mets fan, so I understand pain and suffering on a whole other level. It's great. That's why I love fall, because I remember what it's like to feel good about sports again. But look, that'll do it for us today. You can follow him on Twitter at Johnny McKex. You can follow me at Joe Pizzapia 17. You can hit us up there with all your questions. For everybody here at RotoWire, have a great weekend of Daily Fantasy.